What's up, everybody? Welcome to another Grayscale Gorilla podcast. I'm your host, Chad. With me, as always, is Chris Schmidt.
Hello, everybody.
And look who's back, Nick.
Well, hello, everybody. How are you?
We're doing good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm feeling good.
Feeling good? Everybody should be feeling good because today is an exciting day.
What's happening?
Today we launched Slayer. We launched the Slayer new album. We launched a new HDRI expansion pack called Pro Studios Metal, and I'm super excited about it. I was up late getting it all ready, up early, making sure everything was in its right place, and it's in the public now. You can go get it on our site. You may, if you were at...
This one's been a long time coming.
Yeah, we talked about it. In fact, I think we showed it off at NAB. So if you were at NAB and you came up to our booth and you saw us, we were probably showing it in some form. And then it kind of sat for a while we released Signal 1.5 and all that other stuff. But now it's Metal's time to shine.
Oh, that was a good one.
Dude, I've been using the Metals pack in AskGSG episodes for like 3 months. And people are like, can we get it? We want that. We want the Metals. Well, I'm like, I know. I'm just going to keep using these because it's too good.
Go get it. Go get it now for an introductory price of $59. And that price is going to go up. So you're going to want to grab that as soon as possible.
Chad, can I ask you a totally selfish question?
That's the only questions I accept.
Good. What is it about Metals that makes it so hard to light? And why does this pack really work? Because the thing is it works. You show it off. You show off other, you know, regular, really good HDRIs. If you click them and you try to add them to Metals, it's really hard to get it to look right. And then all of a sudden you make this pack and you click it and it's just looking good. So what is it about Metals that makes it so hard to light?
Well, they're reflective. That's the hardest part. No, seriously though, the reason that I even made this pack is because of that very thing. Metals, Chrome logos, big blockbuster, epic movie title logos, even products like wristwatches or engine parts or something like that. They're really only as good as the environment that they're in because they're just super reflective. So if you don't have the right environment or the right HDRI, it's just not going to look right. And you can't just use like regular HDRIs. Like you can't just take an HDRI of your office or outside and expect it to look metallic. Because in studio situations, when you're lighting a wristwatch or a machine part or a ring, like a piece of jewelry, that's not what you're building in the photo studio. You're building soft boxes and you're reflecting light into cards and you're trying to create a sense of shape, a sense of what the surface actually looks like, what it's like silhouette is, all through bouncing light into cards. You never see any really beautiful product renders or metal renders with a harsh light pinging on it. It just doesn't look beautiful. It doesn't look appealing, which is why you see all these like really gorgeous gradients and just kind of like gray spots and little hot parts that kind of bleed off into black. And so there's a ton of HDRIs that do like studio lighting. We even have one called Pro Studios, which is great for just like general kind of product shots. Like if you're going to make this microphone or something like that, it's great. Those are perfect for that kind of thing. But they kind of fall apart once you start to make anything look metallic or chrome or aluminum or gold or anything that's going to be highly reflective. And that's where Pro Studios Metals comes in, because it's literally, I built every single one of those images by hand and tested them against objects that I have in my library that I think people would typically be lighting with that kind of stuff. And a lot of those images are on the website. You can check them out.
Yeah, I kind of thought you were cheating at first. I was like, oh, those just look good because you're using Arnold, you know? And then I started using them with the physical render and using them with, you know, models and stuff that I've always played with and tried. And I was like, wow, these really actually work. So yeah, if anybody out there is using, is doing a lot of product rendering, go check it out, especially if you already own HDRI Studio rig. It's compatible with that, and also HDRI Link and HDRI Link Suite. Got a lot of things with HDRI. You know why? Because everyone's lighting with HDRI these days. HDRs, that's what it's all about.
Very true.
That's what it's all about. So yeah, check it out. We're excited it's finally out, and it's on sale for $59. Is that right?
That is correct. I mean, that price is going to go up, man. Because I feel like these are worth a lot more, in my opinion, just because of the usefulness. And I've been using them since I made them, which is going on like 6 months now.
Yeah.
And I think they're super versatile. They're not just for metals too. I don't want you to think like, oh, I don't really do a lot of metal. They're great for just like product renders or typography stuff. I use them, the like title that says Pro Metals on the site. It's very much kind of like that summer blockbuster kind of title, and it's great for doing that kind of stuff too. So
all right, I looked it up. I'm gonna give you guys the price and then we'll move on, because this is bonkers. We're gonna turn the price up. Have to, come on.
I know.
$59 if you already have our HDRIs, already have Link and all that stuff, you can go get it for $59. HDRI Link Suite is right now, it's $259. That means if you use a third-party renderer, Arnold, Redshift, Octane, Cycles, all that stuff, it works with that. You get HDRI Link and all the HDRI packs, including metals. And then if you're using physical render and want to throw in Top Coat and Lightkit Pro and HDRI Studio Rig, that's $457. So all of those numbers are at least 30% off. So yeah, if you're looking at lighting, getting some HDRIs in your Cinema 4D renders, go check it out. We got some suites there that save you some cash. And then if you already own our stuff, $59. But you could light some metals. Sounds good.
Yeah. And if you make anything, hashtag it. Like if you put it on Instagram or Twitter, I think some people in GSG Connect were saying they were going to use GSG Pro Metal, or I think that was it. Let me check. You can hashtag it and we can all look at each other's metal renders. Which would be fun.
I tell you, I would enjoy that. I would enjoy looking at your metal renders, folks.
GSG Pro Metals is the hashtag. Use it if you have this pack, and we'd love to see what you're making.
Heck yeah. Get the shiny stuff. Mm-hmm. Well, what else is going on? I feel like we have Seagraph coming up. We'll probably talk Seagraph more
about Seagraph. Soon. I got mixed up where I thought Seagraph was a week earlier than I thought it was, so I kind of had a couple hours of panic there until you guys calmed me down just like a half hour ago.
So we had 2 weeks until Seagraph. You know, for people that haven't gone to Seagraph or what is Seagraph? What's Seagraph all about? Chad, you've been doing Seagraph for a while. So have you, Chris, both of you.
Yeah, I've been like 8 in a row.
What's Seagraph all about? Why should people go? Should people go? And what are we doing there?
I love Seagraph. It's so much fun. Like I've gone to it for a bunch of different purposes in different years. My reasons for going have evolved. Early on, it's just like to get involved in the industry because we didn't have a Chicago scene going yet. People didn't know each other. So I just go there to like shake hands and whatnot. And I got to meet all the folks at Maxon personally and to meet other artists using Cinema 4D. And then for a while, I got involved in Animation Mentor, and I was hanging out with some of the Animation Mentor students and teachers and those hangouts. But it's also, there's a trade show, but it's a lot more focused on the artist and the art in a lot of ways. So you have a bunch of booths and software and, tech demos going on. But there's also tons and tons of presentations from, like, the person in charge of animation for the newest Pixar movie, and then a director talking about the special effects in the new Guardians of the Galaxy movie. And then there's just so many amazing talks, and they're technical. Some of them are fun. Some of them are like just talking about like, workflow. And then there's highlight reels and showings like in giant movie theaters of like all this cool animation that's come out in the last year. There's like events called Birds of a Feather when there's all these like specialty groups of like, I know I'm trying to think of the specifics, but it's like, you know, there's a birds of a feather for animation, or a birds of a feather for Houdini artist, or a birds of a feather for women in the industry. And it's just like all these little focus groups that kind of break out, and they can go hang out and meet other like-minded people. It's just a lot of fun to wander around and, you know, pick up swag, meet people, see new software, see, it's almost like being in person. My favorite part is those talks. And it's like being in person for those behind the scenes things you see on DVDs, but it's like being there in person, and you can get up and ask a question to the director, or the person in charge of coloring, or the editors. It's so much fun. Some of the stuff is really intimate too. Like I remember a couple years ago, the Lakia. What's the one that does all the stop motion animation? Like they had Leica? Done, Leica, thank you. They had come out with a big feature movie, and they had a session, and it was a very tiny room, and I was only one of 20 people in there, and they kind of blew up and got a lot bigger. But it was for a little while, it was these guys are doing the most amazing animation, and I'm one of such a few number of people in this room getting to hear them talk about it. It was super cool and personal. And then, oh man, I can just keep going on. I just think it's so much fun. There's the emerging technologies room, yes, where there's all these people that are prototyping, most of it's physical type of hardware. There's the newest hologram technology or interactive VR experimentation things, and you know, controlling something by blowing bubbles in a direction, or getting force feedback from different devices.
I've got a good emerging tech story for you.
Do it.
I was, I forget what year it was. It was about the time that the crappy Star Wars movies were being released.
The prequels, as they're affectionately known.
You mean the 70s?
Oh, low blow, dude. Low blow. You just made a lot of enemies.
I'm sorry. I love you, nurse.
Anyway, so we're all sitting there in emerging technologies, and we're watching a demo of this headset that you put on someone, and it's this kind of massive headset, goes over their ears and stuff, and it covers up their eyes. And attached to the headset is an RC controller panel, and you are another person that's not wearing the headset is controlling the person with the headset with this remote control, and making them walk a certain direction, backwards, forwards, purely based on throwing off their equilibrium with sound, and making them feel they're kind of going, they're falling. It was the most bizarre thing I'd ever seen. So we've got a person driving another person, and that kind of drew a crowd. And I'm standing there looking at the spectacle, and all of a sudden I just see this 6'5", 350-pound guy come up next to me wearing a black suit. And if you've ever been to Seagraph, that's going to stand out. Everybody is a bunch of, small kind of nerdy type people. And here's this football player size guy just walks up, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? I look around, there's another one, and there's another one. And I look behind this group of guys, and they're all look really kind of menacing. And in the center is George Lucas and Dennis Muren. And they're being escorted through emerging technologies, and they stop at the magnet, drive a person thing, and George puts it on, and Dennis Muren, I think it was Dennis, or maybe it was somebody else, was steering George Lucas around. It was the most surreal thing, because these giant bodyguards, they wouldn't let anybody come near him. And it was just one of those things where you're just wow, this is so freaky and weird. And then later on in the show, I saw, I don't know if for those of you who don't know who Dennis Muren is, Google him, because the guy's worked on every amazing film with any sort of killer VFX. He's an ILM legend. And he's a very peculiar looking guy. In fact, he looks like the dude from Rocky Horror Picture Show. So I was in, I had a few drinks, and I saw him outside of the hotel, and I took a picture. I asked him if I could take my picture with him, and I took my picture with him, and I tweeted, I just met the Rocky Horror Picture Show guy, and put it out there. And a few people caught who it was. But anyway, if you're out there, Dennis, and you're listening, which I'm sure you are, I apologize for saying that you look like the Rocky Horror Picture Show guy.
Again, today.
Anyway, yeah, Seagraph, man.
I was just getting over that, and now you brought up some sort of memories.
I know. It's tough.
Well, so the other Seagraph news is we'll be there.
We will. Grace,
we will. No bodyguards. We will have minimal bodyguards around us. And if you're in LA and you're going to Seagraph, come say hi. We got a booth again at the Maxon booth with Cinema 4D. We'll be a part of C4D Live. I know Chris and I both have presentations, but all three of us are going to be at the booth hanging out all through Seagraph. So if you come in the trade show part of it, come say hi. We got all the cool new swag. All the swag. Did we ever figure that out?
We did. We figured it out every time, and it's just swag. We don't add extra letters in.
Pens.
Oh yeah. Come get a hug and come check out all our new stuff. We're gonna be showing off some stuff too. So we hope to see you guys there. We always like interacting with you guys, learning about how our customers actually use our products and watch our training and all that stuff. So come by, say hi at Seagraph and tell us you listen to the podcast. We'll give you a pen. Or more. We might have more.
Who knows? Buy us a beer and anything's possible.
Anything else at Seagraph that you guys are excited about? I know they always put out that awesome movie. Maybe we should link that up while I'm remembering. We do have show notes. Put a link up there for Pro Studios. We'll put a link for the new Seagraph video, which what do they call that? They basically show off some of the new 3D technologies in this video, like
the white papers.
Yeah, the white papers video.
Yeah, and the white papers. Love those.
It's so fun to watch because you get to see all the cool tech that they build that ends up, you know, in movies that the next year. Or in commercials or whatever, like,
or so, in Photoshop
or in Photoshop, like new water sims that speed things up or sand, a lot of simulation stuff these days, right? Or ways to light that are even faster.
So sorting algorithms, image searching, like it's always crazy. In fact, that's another little event that I've made an effort to go to most years where it's like the white paper, the tech paper fast forward, where all the people were doing a presentation about something technical, they get up and they have 30 seconds to essentially pitch their idea and convince you to come to their bigger talk. And so you get like this little taste of like all these crazy things. And then like 2 years later, you'll see it like implemented in the After Effects or something. So it's like you're seeing the people writing the algorithms, like excitedly talking about their presentation. So that stuff is really fun.
If you like white papers, there's actually a YouTube channel that I subscribe to called 2 Minute White Papers. And it's a guy who just takes these white papers and condenses them down into 2 minute YouTube clips. So you can kind of get an idea of the technology in really kind of fast, digestible ways. And I love that stuff, man. I love seeing what's coming in the next 5 years. And then when you spot it, you're like, oh man, I remember the white paper on how to do like sand and like the clumping and all that sort of thing. So it's fun.
I'm going to have to subscribe.
Like and subscribe, folks.
I'm always looking for more YouTube channels. There's a tricky thing when it comes to YouTube where I'm constantly trying to find good content and be very specific about what I follow, but people on YouTube are always kind of constantly falling off and like disappearing, and like certain YouTubers just don't put out new content whatsoever. And you're like, oh, so you have to be constantly adding to your collection of people you're following.
Hmm. Yeah. Just as many times though, I'll find a site where I've never seen their stuff and then it goes on forever and ever. And I'm like, whoa. Very cool. Which, you know, that reminds me. I think we've been on YouTube long enough to let people know or to remind people. You know, we have less than like a fifth, probably way less than a fifth of our videos that we post are on YouTube right now. But there's so many more of them that we've hosted on platforms like Vimeo. So if you're listening, if you're new to Grayscale Gorilla and you haven't been to our tutorials page, I encourage you to go there to see it all, because that way, no matter where it's hosted, we make sure our tutorials page is up to date. You can go search there. We have some categories and all that stuff. So just want to put that out there. If you've been back through our YouTube stuff and you're like, saying it all, go check out our training page. Or is that what it's called? Tutorials page.
Tutorial page.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there'll be like literally five times more videos over there. Yeah, we got a lot.
Yeah, it's insane. Sometimes I forget what we have. So that's like my go-to, is I'll just search that page and be like, oh yeah, we already made a tutorial about that. I can't do that one. That one's been done.
The amount of times I've watched my own tutorials, that I never thought that would be a part of the process, but remembering exactly how to set up certain things, or like a low poly mesh for a high poly object. Yep. How do I do that again? And I'll watch it. I'll watch my own self teaching me from the past.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
The one I've done that with the most is the UV unwrapping tutorial, because it's something I would do so infrequently. I think I finally remember, but there was a while where I had to go and watch that, because I would unwrap the UVs on like one object a year. It's like, what's the process for like the old school like pelt mapping thing where you like mm-hmm. cut a, you know, do like an incision in one spot, pin these points, smooth it all out.
It always feels like you're dissecting something, like a frog.
Yeah,
you know? You're peeling it and like pinning it down.
I'm gonna be talking a little bit about that in my SIGGRAPH presentation. I think I haven't completely nailed it down, but nice. I think I will be doing a little bit of UV stuff and whatnot.
I think I might do a tutorial on triplanar mapping, because I feel like that's a lot of people are aware of it but not really sure about what it does. So I think that might be a tutorial that I record this week or next week.
That'd be cool. I'd watch that. Although, like, am I wrong in just thinking triplanar mapping is cubic mapping with smooth edges? Is there more to it than that?
Not much more.
But maybe people don't know the way to think about it.
Well, yeah, it's kind of confusing because it sounds complicated. It's one of those things where it's like triplanar. That's a word that sounds like it's got math involved, and to hell with that. That's not really. I need to actually figure out before I do the tutorial what the hell, where that word even came from.
It's just three plane mapping. That's all it's saying, right? Triplanar, yeah, three planes.
I guess you're right. I mean, maybe it's just as simple as that. I do want to know how it came about, though, and like I'm interested in knowing
like when where, to use it.
Yeah, well, I know I'm pretty sure I know when to use it, and I've been using it in Octane Arnold and Redshift, but it's just like, it's one of those things, like, why wasn't it, if that's such a, like, why did it take so long for everybody to, I'm just curious, like, why it took so long for something like that to come around, because it's such a, like, yeah, why wouldn't I want a cubic map with soft corners, like, that should be a thing, like, a long time ago.
It's such a cool hack that when I've seen you use it, it seems like such a no-brainer. So it would be interesting to know.
Anywho, speaking of rendering, should we do a Render Wars update?
Oh, yeah.
Guys, I got to say, I'm getting closer to calling it.
You're going to call a winner already for the Render Wars?
I'm getting close.
Oh, my goodness. Is this a teaser, or are you gonna collecting data?
I'm still collecting data, but I gotta say, every time I get an email or an update that there's an email of an update on the Redshift Alpha, I'm like, oh dude, yeah, this is pretty rad. And
it's not out yet, though, right?
It's not out yet. It's still an alpha, which is really It's really kind of cool. They're not rushing it to market before all the features are set, and they're taking their time and they're making sure everything's working. And it's just, man, like when you use something that has the control that you're used to in, let's say, Arnold or Physical or something like that, and you take the GPU thing and make it, and that just makes it like instant. So it's like so fast. It just combines the best of both worlds right now for me. And I really enjoy it. In fact, all of the images on the Pro Studios metal page were done using Redshift. And all the depth of field was in camera, everything. I just like I would render it, and I'd be like, wow, this rendered so fast. Like, I'm just going to make it 4K. And then I'd be like, I'm going to make it 6K. And it would take like no time at all. And you'd just be like, whoa, this is insane. Like I was going to build all of the all of the promo images in Arnold just because I really still love Arnold's feature set and its workflow and everything. But I started working on it and I'm like, oh, man, I don't want to sit here and wait for this. This is going to take forever. So I quickly switched it into Redshift. And I'm telling you, man, that's an impressive renderer. Impressive.
Yeah, I'm excited. I just, you know, when are we going to see this thing?
I don't know. I think they're going to be at SIGGRAPH. So if you're interested in Redshift, find them at SIGGRAPH. I think they'd probably love to tell you about their product.
Yeah. There's an interesting thing that's going on. I see it mostly in video games, but, and I don't know, maybe it's existed for a while, but I feel like I'm seeing more and more of this open alpha concept where you're like, you can pre-buy into like a video game or a piece of software, or it's just kind of open and they're like letting you come along for the development. And they're constantly essentially beta testing as they're going, but you're giving suggestions, you're taking feedback from their entire audience about where the direction they should go in. They go, you know, people can make videos about it. A lot of things are getting kickstarted this way, or they have a Patreon where it's getting supported, so it's moving forward. So it's, a lot of the stuff is in some ways even getting community built. Like what everybody wants to see is what it is becoming. It's a very interesting kind of responsive way of, not everything can and should be built that way, but the things that are, it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is really interesting because it's an open alpha. You have to go to their forum and send them an email and prove that you're, you know, not a jerk, a pirate, a jerky pirate. And then if they, you know, check you out and you check out, you can get on. And what I think is interesting about that is that not only all the things that you said, but it's kind of like a really unique marketing thing too, because you basically are getting everybody hooked on it. You're getting, there's no restrictions on it, whether, so you could use it in production, you could use it on a client job, you could use it however you want. And that's the hope. The hope, I think, is that the entire alpha starts to become really dependent on it and need it. And then when it goes live, they buy it. It's a no-brainer. They have to buy it. They've been using it on jobs. They become dependent on it. They love it. So it's a smart move, I think.
I want to play with it.
Well, it is available for Mac. You just have to have NVIDIA cards in your Mac. And then I think you could do it.
Time to bust the old cheese grater out.
You still have that, right? Isn't that the 2013?
2012. Yeah, 2011, 12, maybe. It's old. It is an old machine. It's still.
I still like the way it looks, though.
It's a gorgeous piece of hardware.
Yeah, it's heavy.
Yeah. Well, I think all of them now are like mine. Mine's about 80 pounds. It's got 4 GPUs and a giant power supply in it. So yeah, they're not light anymore. Not that they were ever that light, to be honest. But yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah. Well,
sorry. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say last time, I think it was before I was on the last podcast, we were at Chris's house doing the last episode of Ask GSG. I figured I'd mention that because I'm just looking at your room there, Chris. I'm like, oh, I've been there now with all the lights all set up. And if you missed it, we did the last episode of Ask GSG, which the season just ended. Season 3 just ended. And I happen to be in town. And Chad came down as well, and all three of us are on the last episode. And if you 30, missed it,
38 episodes of season 3. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty nuts. We actually did this really fun. I don't know how successful it was, but we did this really crazy idea where we all worked on a Cinema 4D project for only 2 minutes at a time. So there was a concept to render out like this popsicle kind of animation, and we all had to like daisy chain into the seat and work for 2 minutes. And as soon as the timer went off, the next person jumped in.
There's a render go round.
Render go round. It was pretty crazy. 2 minutes is not a lot of time.
It started off as 1 minute and it was like,
I couldn't even sit down and explain anything.
I couldn't even like get my bearings. You guys are on a Mac. This mic hotkeys aren't there.
It's fun. you know, AskGSG started as a way for us to answer the question that so many of you guys have, which is, hey, how do you do this? How do you do this in Cinema 4D? And there was really no good place to do that. You know, to answer that in a tutorial, you can't really answer that per tutorial because we get thousands of questions. And so
and you can't answer in a tweet because it's longer than that.
Yeah. You can't answer in a tweet or an email because you need a screen to really show people. Most of the time, you need a screen to really show people what the heck's going on. So AskGSG was born a few years ago, and I'm glad it's still rolling, man. So thanks to Chris for heading that up. And if you guys, a lot of people don't know, we actually sell each of those seasons separately. If you want to watch, you know, hours of us answering Cinema 4D questions.
Hundreds of hours.
Yeah, hundreds of hours. I think it's, you know, over 30 episodes per season and about 2 hours per episode. So you start to add that up. And what's really cool is we just added it to our site. So you don't have to go. If you looked at the previous way to get that was on a different website entirely. And now we just integrated it all. So it's really easy to find. Just go to the store and you can see them there. But I thought I'd announce that since the season's over, get a little summer lull, hit the pool, Chris, and then maybe be back for another season.
Yeah. It was super fun. And I think both of you getting there, it was great because both of you got there like half hour late. So there's like this fun introduction. But I think it was my favorite episode in 3 years of doing this. In over 100 episodes at this point. Like, this is the best episode. So that was fun.
That was fun.
That was a good time. And then we all went out and had drinks.
Yes.
Can't beat that. I tell you, I'm going to share what happened that night as well, which is we went to the motion graphics meetup, or as actually this Chicago C4D meetup. And formerly intern Ivan, you know, he's got a real job now. We shouldn't call him Ivan the intern, but, you know,
Now he's Ivan the VR expert.
Now he's Ivan the VR expert. He did an awesome presentation about, you know, where VR is, what it is, how easy it is to get into, and you know, how far it has to go to really, you know, just get to where he thinks it should be. But even better than that, I got to try out a real VR demo, which I've only done once. I've only done the Google VR demo, which is very compelling, where you can fling yourself around the earth and like walk through cities like you're Godzilla. Very, very cool demo. But I haven't really played a lot of the other games and stuff that they had, but they had the Walk the Plank VR. Did you guys do that one when you were there?
Yeah, mostly. It glitched out towards the end on me, but I got to step out on the board.
I did it.
It was compelling. I guess for me, I feel like I'm pretty rational. I feel like I'm a pretty like rational person. I don't really like get super emotional with movies or like really, I don't really get scared easily. And I feel like I'm always like kind of grounded in reality. Like if a movie's trying to push my buttons, I'm like, I'm just sitting here on a couch movie. Good luck making me cry, sucker. And what? You know,
heartless.
Yeah, basically heartless, right? So, and I when I put my eyeballs in this VR thing, I start walking around, and the visual cues and everything that they set up for you, the how fast the refresh rate is, like whatever magic was happening inside the goggles worked, because I constantly told myself I'm only 2 inches off the ground, I'm not floating above a building like walking across a plank right now. I'm literally stepping on a 2x4 on the ground, and I could not tell my brain to not make me sweat profusely. Like nervous sweat.
I can't remember what it was, but Ivan had like a word for that. And he's talking a bunch about like presence and that you can tell yourself like, I'm wearing goggles, I'm 3 inches off the ground, like this is all good. But it's like, hey, Nick, jump off of this plank. And it's like, nope, like I'm not going to do that. Sorry. And yeah. the rational you can be like, this is fine. I can totally do that. It's all good. But your senses are saying that is not the case.
Yeah, the front part of my brain was saying, hey, this is a bunch of moving pixels and you got goggles on your eyes. But that back part of my brain took over. It just took over and was just like, you're not going to jump off this. What are you, an idiot? You like to live, don't you? And I'm like, let me jump off this 2x4. I'm just going to hit the ground and I just want to watch the animation of me falling. Barely could do it. barely could do it. I had to like trust fall 2 inches. It was compelling. It's interesting to me. I it's still kind of gimmicky. I don't know what the, I guess for me, I have to stop saying it's still kind of gimmicky because there are some really cool applications, and Ivan actually talked about quite a few of them. One that I never thought of, and as soon as he said it, I was like, this is brilliant, is safety training. The ability to put somebody in a scary or difficult situation and give them that feeling of you might die in a training situation was a really compelling thing. Like, you know, to be able to do that I guess I could see that more than I could see these things sitting in people's living rooms. The ability to really train people how to stay safe on a job, let's say, that seemed like a really compelling thing to use this technology for.
Yeah.
Scared the crap out of me.
Did you step off out of the elevator? Freak out?
Yeah, I mean, I've done VR before and it's like whatever. It's just not my thing. I wear glasses and it's hard for people that wear glasses, but I did that one, the Walk the Plank one, and he had me go out and you're basically you know, scared that you're going to fall. And then Ivan was like, "Oh, look over on the wall." And I look over on the wall and there's a giant like spindly spider like crawling towards me on this wall. And I was like, "Dude, no. Don't do that. Don't do that. No, I'm not doing that. Don't make that. If that thing jumps on me, I'm going to be really pissed." It didn't jump on me, thank God. But I was like, and that's when I knew. I'm like, "All right, like so VR is like a really good way to scare the shit out of people." Like, I feel like for entertainment, like horror as a genre is perfect because you can just really, you feel really vulnerable when you're in it and you're wearing it because you can't hear around you. You can't see anything around you. You know, you're vulnerable. And so that immediately puts you in this like kind of like tense state of mind. And if like, I've never done the horror VR games or anything like that, but I've heard they're pretty compelling and I don't ever want to, so I'm fine.
I even did like a PlayStation, which I know Ivan, that's not real VR, but I did the PlayStation game, that was kind of like a scary carnival theme. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't super scary, but it was like you had to go shoot all these little targets in a carnival, and then people would pop out at you, or like stand-ups of people would pop out. It's more like a dark ride with some like game element, and it was spooky at parts of it. I could see that, and you had a flashlight attached to you that you could see, and you had to aim the flashlight to see things. It was compelling. I do agree with you though, like the glasses thing was tough. Also, I have a giant head, so I couldn't quite like strap the thing around sometimes. And
I have a photo. I took a picture of you.
Oh, I got to see that one.
In it, I'm gonna find it right now while you're talking.
Yeah, you put that one on the Instagram. There, I had a lot of fogging up issues.
And yeah, you sweat a lot.
It's probably that I sweat a lot. But it's also, I think it was like it was a pretty humid day, and I don't think that was helping. But mostly, you know, once they make this work for big headed sweaty people, I think, you know, I'll be right in the target market. Once they
nail that market, dude, you're golden, man.
Yeah, man, I'm gonna set my whole living room up.
Just make sure you have plenty of those disposable face, whatever those were called. I don't even remember.
Yeah, Ivan goes, "Hey, can you do us all a favor and put one of these disposable face guards?"
It wasn't until he saw you sweating profusely. He was like, "Yeah, you know what? Here, take this."
Yeah, it's like these little face diaper things to like separate you from the mask. I mean, like that's definitely a little bit gross. It's like all these people trying on this mask, and you're like pushing it like right up against your eyes. And it's like, okay, like I want my personal one, like that nobody else is allowed to touch.
Yeah.
I can be a little germophobic sometimes. So
me too.
Well, we have so it's a rambly one today, but I'm okay with that. I like ramblies. Chad, you said you had a couple tests and stuff that you did. Maybe we could get to those and then make it a short one today.
Yeah, sounds good. So I like I'm sure most of our listeners use either Dropbox or Google Drive, or if you're like me, use both. And I noticed that Google Drive had an update where now they are letting you, they're letting you actually do backups. So you can actually back up your computer or multiple computers using Google Drive. And it's not synced storage, it's actually a backup. So you choose the computer you want to back up, and that's a whole thing. So that made me install the new version. And so that led to me saying, okay, this new version seems pretty rad. It's got a nice little system tray icon. It seems speedy. I like the interface. And I also really like the way Google Drive looks on the interface for the web. So it's a lot cleaner and easier to navigate than Dropbox's web interface. So I asked my friend, Jeremy, he's a guy I trust, and I'm like, hey, what do you use? You're sharing a lot of like image sequences and movies and things like that with clients. Are you using Dropbox or using Google Drive? And he's like, yeah, I don't really use Dropbox anymore. And I was like, really? Because I still thought that was the dominant thing, the dominant offering. And he's like, yeah, I use Google Drive now for most things because I found it was faster to upload large files. And I was like, because I've always heard the opposite and I've always experienced the opposite. I was always experienced Dropbox being faster than Google Drive in most situations. So I was, you know, home early from vacation, watching TV, and decided I was on my laptop and I'm like, you know what, I'm just going to try it out, see what it's like. So I found this website where you can download zip files of very specific sizes, like 200 meg, 500 meg, 20 meg, you know, very specific sizes. I downloaded them, and then I just threw them into Dropbox and had my phone on stopwatch, and I would just time them out. And I found that on most tests of 20 megs or lower, Dropbox was just a hair faster than Google Drive, just a little bit, not enough to like make a huge difference, but it was faster. But then once I started going to 100 meg files and eventually up to 500 meg, Google Drive was like 10 or 15% faster than Dropbox, which I thought was really interesting. So I don't know if I'm going to switch completely because I still like Dropbox's ease of use and just being able to right-click and share, and it's just really, really simple. But I am starting to work Google Drive, both sync storage and working off of their web interface more into my more everyday kind of workflow to see how it works. But yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting. So if you're out there and you're pushing files around, let me know what you think. Have you experienced this sort of speed increase on Google Drive, this new version, or if you had the opposite? I like I said, this was not scientific. It was just me with a bunch of zip files throwing them up to the interwebs. But what do you guys use? You guys use both, right?
I just recently grabbed Google Drive based mostly on your recommendation a couple weeks ago. But then I had even partially misunderstood that because I was using it for photos. And you're like, wait, why are you using Google Drive? Put it on Google Photo. I was like, oh, okay. And I fell in love with Google Photo. So I think I actually use, I'm Dropbox, and we're all kind of Dropbox in the house where me and the brothers are syncing all the files up constantly. Kind of business-wise, all of us are using Dropbox.
Yeah, that's what I'm curious about that. Like if that's going to be the same workflow with Google Drive.
Yeah, I don't know.
I feel like I need to get Google Drive in a place that is like Dropbox, where it's just in a folder somewhere. Because right now I just use it on like in a tab, which is fine. But having it just be a file system, that's really why Dropbox is everything to me. Like I have everything I need on Dropbox at all times. And then I archive off of it, which allows me to jump between computers because I travel a lot and pretty much know that I'll have everything that is relevant to me if I just keep it all on Dropbox. So that's why I use Dropbox mostly. We use it in the company as well. Anything that we're sharing or all software, anything we're working on goes in our Dropbox. But Yeah, for me, it's kind of like an external hard drive that's always synced and in my pocket. But instead of being on my pocket, it just shows up on my laptop when I open it. So that's how I use it. Google Drive. We work with a couple other artists that use Google Drive. And so that's the only time I tend to use it is when we have a project with somebody else. But
yeah, I always used it like that, like too, like just in a tab as a separate thing or on my phone or whatever. And I never installed like the desktop client, which is like Dropbox, until, you know, I don't know, a while back. And then I never really used it until this update. So it's definitely, its workflow is almost identical to how Dropbox is right now in terms of how you, you know, sync it up to your different computers and whatnot. But I think where, for me, like what's compelling about it, and I guess what even started this whole thing for me was my frustration with the Dropbox website and like trying to find files through, because I don't sync everything on my Dropbox locally, because I have like a terabyte Dropbox account and I don't want to fill up, I don't need that stuff all the time. I do selective sync on Dropbox where I only sync very specific folders. So if I need to pull something that maybe I'm not syncing, I go to their website and try to find it. And I think their website interface just sucks. And it's just really hard to find stuff. It's really hard to navigate it. So that's what kind of led me down this whole path of like, there's, you know, Google Drive has a pretty cool folder system in Chrome where you can like color folders. You can do a lot of stuff that you can't even do on Windows, like add like colors to folders. I know all you Mac people are laughing at me, but I do wish I had that, because we're visual people, you know, like we're visual human beings. Like I liked, like if I make a color, I'm just jealous of Mac people, I guess, for that reason. Like you can make a color associated with very specific file types and then just immediately scan your desktop and be like, oh, there it is. You can't do that on Windows without some crazy third-party crap that I don't want to put on. But anyway, yeah, so the Google Drive on the Chrome, in Chrome, you can like color folders up and stuff, which is kind of cool. So yeah, interesting findings there. I don't know if it's going to change my feelings about using Dropbox more than G Drive, or maybe they'll just figure out a way to work together and I'll just use one for uploading heavy stuff and Dropbox will be more for like every day, but I don't know. Check it out. Curious to know what everybody else thinks.
Play around. Well, I think, what do you guys, we'll make this a shorter one, wrap this one up. And I know we are also looking at doing some more interviews soon.
Hopefully the next one will be with a guest.
Yeah, those have been really cool to listen to as well. Getting some good guests in here. And, you know, as always, this stuff is the goal for us, the goal for Grayscale Gorilla is always to help the motion designer, to help the artist. So we want to try to answer problems that you guys are having, tackle subjects that you guys are thinking of. So hit us up, as always, in the comments. Hit us up on YouTube. We would love any feedback on iTunes as well. That helps us get the word out. And obviously, if you want to listen to us instead of watching us on YouTube as well, we're over there. Go listen. Walk around. Get some sun and listen to us talk about stuff. But any suggestions, we always love that stuff. Don't forget to check out Pro Metals. It is on its launch price for a limited time, so go grab it. We got a ton of people that are using it already. They're sending out, I'm looking at our GSG Connect here. We have people using it already. They said they're gonna be using it in their daily render today, which is cool. And yeah, if you do any type of work where it's heavy reflection, even I was skeptical with this way of like, oh, these are just for metal. I'm like, mm-hmm. And then once I saw it, I'm like, oh, this is actually really good. So yeah, go check it out. Anything else for today?
No, I think that's good, man. I'll
cover it.
All right,
come see us at Seagraph.
Yeah, we got some Seagraph stuff to plan. So I'm gonna go get working on my presentation.
Cool, cool. All right. Well, I think we're ready to sign off. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we will see you on the next Grayscale Gorilla podcast. Bye.